It's Thursday the 13th. This is better than Friday the 13th, I guess. Welcome into the Huddle on ESPN Upstate with Greg McKinney and Lonzo. Glad you're along today on a cloudy and cool Thursday afternoon with lots of football on the agenda today in the Huddle. Going to hear from Dabo Swinney as Clemson has started practice for the playoffs as they're getting ready for their matchup with Notre Dame coming up on the 29th. So now 16 days away from that. In Dallas. Also coming up, we will check in live with Bob Costello with the Greenville News. He's keeping an eye on Shrine Bowl practice. Shrine Bowl at Wofford College on Saturday afternoon in Spartanburg. And they've had some weather issues at the beginning of the week, as we all did, but they're getting practices in now and getting ready for what should be a good game. Although North Carolina has won like four in a row in the Shrine Bowl. So South Carolina trying to break that little streak. We'll talk to Bob coming up. We'll talk about the new coach at Appalachian State. They have their man. We will get three questions at three on. We will have Diddy in here, Mike Venditti, podcaster, blogger, and host, in here at about 3:20 this afternoon. Talk a little baseball and football with Diddy coming up. Also some NBA stuff to get to. First of all, how about what Toronto did at Golden State last night. Fairly impressive. And what Michael Jordan did at the Hornets game is causing a little bit of a stir. We'll talk about whether that's going to be a thing or not today. If you haven't seen it, you might want to look up the video. So that's coming up as well. Lots to do. Your phone calls and texts and tweets are welcomed. You can call us at 844-477-3776. You can get us on the Health Dare text line, 71307. Start your message with ESPN, and you can get us, as always, on Twitter, at ESPN Upstate. Well, what everybody's talking about, one thing is tonight's Thursday night NFL game, best one in a while. A big one, huge matchup in the AFC as the Chargers and the Chiefs get together in Kansas City, the two best teams in the AFC. This could decide everything from the champion of the West, the number one seed. Just how seriously should we take the L.A. Chargers? Because they've kind of been flying under the radar. But very successful year for them so far. The Chiefs come in at 11-2. Their only two losses, road losses against the Patriots and the L.A. Rams. Both those were three-point games. And they have dominated this series. They have beaten the Chargers nine times in a row, including this season in Los Angeles, week one. But some things have changed momentum-wise, I guess, a little bit since then. The Chiefs will be favored tonight. There's no question about it. Jeff Darlington with ESPN talking about this matchup tonight on Thursday Night Football.
You look back to that moment on Sunday when the Patriots appeared to have the game in hand and the Chiefs looked like they were about to lose to the Ravens. That was going to flip the potential number one seed, or at least the projection of it, going into these final few weeks. And now all of a sudden, it's between the Chiefs and the Chargers. So we've got like an incredible stretch now. I was just looking at it. This is only like the second time in Thursday Night Football in the modern football era that we've had two 10-win team playing. This is an awesome game.
Especially for Thursday Night Football. No complaints about that. We will also have it on the air here on ESPN Upstate. Starting our coverage at 8 o'clock tonight for the Chiefs and the Chargers. It is possible that the winner of this game tonight could have home field advantage throughout the AFC playoffs. And the loser could have the conference's second-best record, but be a wild-card team that has to play three road games. That's what's on the line. That's a pretty big deal tonight. Big, big game tonight, Lonzo. Are you nervous for your Chiefs?
You know what? I wish I could say that I am just no problem. It's going to be piece of cake, walk in the park, that kind of thing. But I can't say that. I mean, there's a reason why San Diego has been doing so well. They're actually pretty good. They got a pretty good defense. They got a pretty good offense. So it's going to be a nice matchup. But as you pointed out before, it's been a long time since San Diego beat Kansas City. And I think it was fairly close to the first game, which was the first game of this year. I am a little nervous. I believe I know what the outcome is going to be, but I'm a little bit nervous.
So nervous you still call them San Diego?
See, that's just never going to go away. This is never going to go away. At least you caught it, you know? I mean, okay. I'm just going to quit Stinking Chargers. I'm just going to call them the Stinking Chargers from now on. That's what I really think of them anyway.
Yeah.
So who cares what city they play for? They're the Stinking Chargers.
Yeah, kind of like nobody wants them. They're a really good team that nobody wants to claim right now. The Chargers last year in Week 15 had recovered from an 0-4 start. They won four in a row to tie the Chiefs, who started 5-0, at 7-6. They came into Kansas City for a Saturday night game. Chiefs won 30-13. Phillip Rivers threw three interceptions. And Kansas City, of course, went on to win the division. And the Chargers did not make the playoffs. So they don't want it to go that way this year. Problem for the Chargers, they have committed 25 turnovers since the start of the 2017 season. That's the lowest total of any team that time. But nine of those came against the Chiefs in three games. So they don't turn it over a lot. When they do, it's against Kansas City. And Kansas City is fourth in the league in takeaways over that time with 49. 36% of their turnovers in a two-year span against one team, the Chiefs.
You know, and here's something else. So that means they're in their head a little bit. The Chiefs' defense has been down. They've still been winning games, but they slowly started getting some guys back, like Houston back. And Eric Berry's coming back for the first time in like a year and a half.
Yeah,
and
that's big.
He has been the heart and soul of that defense. Hopefully they remember him, period. But he gets out there. I mean, he's tenacious. I hope he doesn't get out there and try too hard and hurt himself again. But I think that addition of him being back, that hurts the Chargers a little bit too.
You do not get Sammy Watkins tonight. Foot injury. Shocking, right?
But there's an able replacement.
Yeah, Kelvin Benjamin.
Here's the thing. You know, people are putting Pat Mahomes where they should, at least this year, you know, up with the other elite quarterbacks. Here's the proof about whether he's an elite quarterback or not. Can he make Kelvin Benjamin look like a good receiver again?
Yeah, we have a Kelvin Benjamin question coming up on three questions today.
He looked good early on in his career with Cam. What's he going to look like with Mahomes throwing him the ball?
Starting running back Spencer Ware got a shoulder and a hamstring, so he's out. Cam Irving, left guard, questionable with a knee injury. Tyreek Hill, questionable. Was able to finish last week's game after being injured. Andy Reid has said he thinks Hill will play. Chris Conley will actually be the replacement for Sammy Watkins, but as you said, Kelvin Benjamin figures into the mix. And for the Chargers, they are not without injury either. They are without, or at least questionable, probably unlikely to play as Melvin Gordon, their leading rusher. And their number two guy, Austin Eckler, is also out for the game tonight. So they're top two running backs for San Diego. You got me doing it. For the Chargers are out.
You're going to blame me for that, really?
Yeah, that's all me. You hadn't done that four times at the start of the show. So anyway, just a great matchup tonight. And looking forward to it. The Chiefs and the Chargers, 8 o'clock is our airtime here on ESPN Upstate. She has some thoughts on that game. You can certainly give us a call and let us know what you think.
Hey, you know one thing? I think this is probably the best Thursday night football game all year that I can think of.
Sure.
This is one of those where...
one of the best games all year.
Yeah, this is one of those, even if there was a pretty good college game on, I think more people would turn to watch this game.
Agreed. And, you know, everybody thought that it would be the Steelers and the Patriots. They play this weekend, and not a lot of people care. They thought that would be the big game week 15, but it is not. It's tonight's game between the Chargers and the Chiefs. The other part of the NFL thing that's being watched right now is what coaches may be departing. Of course, we've already had some of that, including Mike McCarthy of the Green Bay Packers. But how many coaches will leave by the end of this season? Field Yates, ESPN NFL reporter, with some thoughts on that.
I think that the number of maybes, like you could see a change there. It's not a guarantee, but you could see it, is greater this year than I think we've been accustomed to in recent seasons. The NFL average is somewhere between, you know, 5 and 7 or 6 and 8, somewhere in that range of coach turnover at the head coach level each offseason. And I wouldn't be surprised if we're right there. And you know, I think conservatively 5 is a conservative guess. I think that there's going to be a lot of turnover, but I think every year it's about the same. It's just a little bit jarring because, you know, we sometimes forecast these head coaches to be saviors, and then 3 years later, they're being fired.
Yeah, and could Ron Rivera be one of them? One of the changes this year, could that be? I think that's still on the table right now, isn't it?
Especially if he loses the next if he loses the next three games, I think even you've got to admit he's probably gone. You don't think so?
Lose all three?
If he loses all three.
Yeah, that would be just an awful. That would be eight straight to wrap up the year. That would not be good.
I got to say, I still think they win two of the three because they've been every game they've lost, they've been in. I think they've lost by a touchdown or less, at least the last three or four losses. So it isn't like they don't have haven't had the opportunity to win. They just haven't come through at the end. But I think they will. I think his job is safe, and it hurts.
I'm glad you're backing up Ron Rivera. It's good to hear you.
It pains me
come
to
his defense. And we'll see. They do need to win a game or two here. And we'll see if they can do that. Monday night, they play the New Orleans Saints. Get them at home. Of course, they finish up with the Saints on the road at the end. And they have the Falcons in between. Carson Wentz, a little update on him. They had a CT scan on his back. It revealed a fractured vertebrae. If allowed time to rest, they say it will fully heal. And there shouldn't be any further issues. So how much rest are you going to give it? There comes the rub. There will be a continued evaluation of Carson Wentz's back to determine if continuing to play this season will make his injury worse. Carson Wentz could be done for the year.
Come on. I mean, this is the future of your franchise. You can't play him now. You got to let him rest. I mean, because you have a long shot at making the playoffs now.
Mm-hmm.
Sit him down.
And they play the Rams this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, so he doesn't need to get hit by some of those guys. Yeah, sit him down.
Well, I mean, Nick Foles is going to play this weekend, but will he play the rest of the year? And you're lucky. You got Nick Foles, who's proven his ability to come in and play effectively. So that will be a big story this weekend. It's not the first time that he's been on the injury report because of his back. Wentz was a limited participant on consecutive Wednesdays in late October, but his absence yesterday marked the first time he's missed a practice this season, a full practice. So that's the news on Carson Wentz, and it's not particularly encouraging. Nothing has happened in the last 24 hours to make that look any better. And also from New Orleans, Brandon Marshall will apparently not be in the playoffs yet again. Brandon Marshall has played 178 regular season games without appearing in the playoffs in 13 years. Waived by the Saints, according to the team yesterday. Marshall has the ninth longest run of no playoffs in NFL history. And it appeared likely to end this season because New Orleans going to the playoffs, and he was on that team, but nope, out yesterday. Six-time Pro Bowl selection, did not appear in a game with the Saints. He signed after Dez Bryant suffered that Achilles injury. Saints apparently didn't see enough for him to activate him despite the lack of production they've gotten from other receivers behind Michael Thomas, who's obviously great. Had some rookies and second-year guys, and all those guys add up to like seven catches over three games. They could get Ted Ginn Jr. back from injured reserve in time for the playoffs. Sean Payton said this week that Ginn's rehab from knee injury has been going well, so hopefully that will help their receiver core. 844-477-3776, the Health Dare text line, 71307. All right, we'll check in on Clemson practice as they prepare for Notre Dame coming up on the 29th. Hear from Dabo Swinney coming up. Stay with us. Just underway Thursday Huddle on ESPN Upstate. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Huddle on ESPN Upstate with Greg McKinney and Lonzo. Phone lines open 844-477-3776. Health Dare text line 71307. Clemson Tigers have begun practice for their Cotton Bowl game, their college football playoff game. Coming up in Dallas against the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame on December 29th, so 2.5 weeks or so away from that one. Dabo Swinney talking after practice and says that the experience the Tigers have being in the playoffs the last 4 years is a big edge for them going in again in 2018.
Well, it definitely helps. I mean, there's no question. I think we all draw on our experience, good and bad, you know, as you go through whatever it is you're doing. But it's our fourth time in a row, and then we've been in a lot of big bowl games and stuff, so I think We've learned a lot over the years. I think we've got a very good formula that we believe in as far as how we get ready, and a good balance. I mean, I think that, you know, for us this time of year is multi, you know, we have a lot we got to do. You know, obviously you got to get back. You got fundamentals and technique and physicality and intelligence is what wins. And, you know, because these are all four really good teams, and there's just a few plays that usually make a difference in these type of games. So you got to play well, and you know, so you got to prepare well. So for us, it's having the right balance and, you know, getting our opponent prep, but also, you know, really sharpening ourselves up from a fundamental technique standpoint. And then it's a long time from a physicality standpoint. So you got to make sure you get a good mixture of good on good. And because you can't just show up on December 29th and start tackling somebody. So you got to have a good balance. And I think our experience, you know, I think really helps us as far as striking the balance that we need from a preparation standpoint, how we manage the schedule.
It's kind of difficult on the team and the players and the coaches this year, because they're going to be away at Christmas because the game is so early on December 29th. So no way you can be home for Christmas. In fact, Clemson will leave December 23rd, and they will be in the Dallas area for a full week to try to kind of get their legs and get to a normal practice schedule and be ready for that Saturday game against Notre Dame. Dabo said this first time, as long as he can remember, that he won't get to Alabama for the holiday season, his home state. And that's certainly going to be the problem for the players as well, but they'll give that up for this opportunity to compete in the college football playoff. Practice yesterday was about 90 minutes. They've had exams this week at Clemson. Also, Clemson coaches have been running around trying to see recruits as we close in on the dead period before signing day. In fact, Dabo and some of his coaches just went to California across the country and said that with those long legs of plane flights, he's been getting out the laptop and watching film on Notre Dame. So he's taken advantage of that time. He says he feels like they have a good feel for who they are, what Clemson has to do from a preparation standpoint, and the same for the staff. In fact, it was Sweeney and the co-offensive coordinators, Jeff Scott and Tony Elliott, along with Brandon Streeter, the quarterback's coach, who went out to California to check on a 2019 wide receiver commit and a prospect for 2020 at quarterback. They're trying to get those last visits in, initiate contact until Sunday, when that's the dead period, when the dead period begins. Early signing begins a week from now, so that's why the coaches have had to go out. That's a difficult balance. You know, got a huge game coming up, and you're just starting to practice for that, and yet it's a hot recruiting time. That's one of the issues with the way the schedule runs these days.
That's one of the ways you stay on top, though. I mean, They've managed to get good recruits being in this position year after year lately, so I think they're used to it by now.
They definitely have the pattern down at Clemson. So anyway, practice has begun, 90 minutes yesterday, and they'll continue their workouts before they leave on the 23rd, so still got 10 days before they head out to Texas to get ready for the game. Appalachian State has their man, their new head coach. They have an agreement with NC State's offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach, Eli Drinkwitz, to be the new head coach. It'll be a 5-year deal. It'll run through 2023. It has been approved as of this morning by the Board of Trustees at Appalachian State. Still has to be approved by the North Carolina Board of Governors. Eli Drinkwitz, he's 35 years old. He'll replace Scott Satterfield, who moved on to Louisville. Doug Gillen, the athletic director, said the App State football program is in great position to continue its championship ways, and says that Drinkwitz is committed to excellence academically, competitively, socially, and to the well-being of student athletes. Says he has great character and a clear vision for the future of Mountaineer football. Drinkwitz has guided NC State's offense the past three seasons. The previous two, he was an assistant at Boise. He also worked at Auburn, worked at Arkansas State. This past season, the Wolfpack were number one in the ACC in passing, about 328 yards a game. They were tied for third in scoring average, 35.5 points a game. 12th in rushing, 143.7 yards per game. Of course, they had Ryan Finley, one of the better quarterbacks around. He led the league in passing, 68% completion rate, about 3,800 yards, 24 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. Drinkwitz has coached some good quarterbacks. He coached Boise State quarterback Brent Rippon when he was a freshman in 2015. And he was a quality control assistant at Auburn in 2010 when they won the national championship. So he's been around some winning programs. And remember, he was mentioned as a possible assistant at South Carolina for a while. A couple years back when he was mentioned for that as some assistants were being hired. But that didn't happen. Now he'll be the head coach for the Mountaineers of Appalachian State. They're preparing for the Carriers Bowl in New Orleans. On Saturday night at 9 o'clock, they take on Middle Tennessee in that game. Scott Satterfield was 51-24 in 6 seasons with the Mountaineers. They got to a share of 3 Sun Belt Conference titles, and they've gone to bowls 3 straight years. So we'll see. Not sure if Drinkwitz is going to be the right choice here, but, I mean, certainly he's a good offensive mind and did some good things at NC State. And so look for that kind of offense perhaps to translate over to Appalachian State in Boone. Eli Drinkwitz from NC State to Boone to coach the Mountaineers. 844-477-3776. HealthCare text line 71307. Let's hit another break. We'll be back. You're listening to The Huddle with Greg McKinney and Lonzo. This is ESPN Upstate. So did you see Michael Jordan beat Malik Monk last night?
After you said, I hadn't seen it, but I looked it up.
Hopefully not going to be much of a thing here. But you knew that something was going to be said after it happened. It was in the Hornets game last night against Detroit, and they won. Kind of a crazy ending. After watching that ending, Jordan kind of smacked lightly the back of the head of guard Malik Monk a couple times in the closing seconds of the game because he ran out on the floor and could have cost him the game. You just don't know what the officials are going to do with that. What happened was that Bismack Biyombo and Monk ran from the bench onto the court to celebrate as Jeremy Lamb hit a 22-foot game-winning shot with 0.3 seconds left over Detroit. And officials went to the scorer's table and looked at it and talked about it and assessed the Hornets a one-shot technical foul for having 6 men on the floor. Michael Jordan today said it was a tap of endearment. That's a good movie title, A Tap of Endearment. And there's no penalty expected to be levied against him. No discipline from the league. You look at the video, you obviously can see that it's a playful thing.
Did you have a problem with that?
I've
had people in this building do the same to me before, and I probably have done the same to...
Yep.
It's a working... you feel comfortable enough to do that. It's just, you do that to one of your boys or to one of your children. You just do that. It doesn't look like there was any malice behind it. It was like, you dummy. That's basically what it was.
It was. Went viral, though. It was all over the place, all over my Twitter feed last night and this morning.
Is Jordan going to have to officially apologize for doing that?
He's already put out a statement. Put out a statement said it was a tap of endearment. Monk said, it's Mike, whatever he does is going to make news because nowadays it's all social media. Everybody has their phone out there. I wasn't surprised. Hornets coach James Borrego said he hadn't seen the video, but he smiled and said, so that went viral, huh?
See, I think Jordan should say, if he does it again, I might hit him a little bit harder.
Maybe didn't want to do that. Probably didn't want to do that. And Monk didn't understand why he was going to be penalized for celebration. He said if they call that, they have to call every single one of them. Everybody celebrates and has a foot on the court. We won. I'm glad we got the W. Biyombo said he got caught up in the moment. He said, I didn't realize there was still time on the clock. 0.3 seconds. He said, I was watching the replay. You could see I was all the way out there. Malik was on the court. When Jeremy Lamb pointed at the clock, we were like, oops, shoot, we still have some game to play. 0.3 seconds. The coach, Borrego, called it a teachable moment for his team because it could have cost them the game. They got one technical foul shot. They made that, but the basket stood, so they still won by 1 point. But, you know, if they give them more than one technical foul shot, you can lose.
How many times is that called, though? Because I agree. You see celebrations like that all the time in the NBA. Mm-hmm. How many times does a referee call that? That's just, I think it's more odd that it was called than if it wasn't.
I'm not sure the answer to that question. But I do think it's up to the guys on the bench to pay attention to the clock. Wait till you see triple zeros if you're going to run out onto the court. And I guess you never saw triple zeros. 0.3 stayed on the clock. Borrego said they've never been in that situation. It was a natural response, but you have to react the right way. He said they'll learn from it. Won't let that happen again. Anyway, you can look at Michael Jordan giving a little slap to the head of Malik Monk last night. Running out onto the floor and causing a technical
Should
foul shot.
Should be an HR violation. Should take it up with the president of
the
company.
Well, that's the other thing. You know, I mean, I'm sure some people are saying that. I've tried to avoid that thread on my Twitter feed, but I'm sure some people are saying, hey, the owner of a...
If my boss did that to me, you know what I would do? Yeah, you wouldn't do anything. Shut up.
Well, yeah. But if you choose to make a thing out of it, you can make a thing out of it. And Malik Monk, of course, is not making anything out of
it. If I'm going to have anybody give me a tap of endearment, I'm okay with it being Michael Jordan.
Yeah, he's kind of that. There was a discussion today, I think, on Lebatard, that he's just in this different plane than he's not your typical owner. You know, you wouldn't typically see an owner sitting over there on the bench popping a player on top of the head. But Michael Jordan's.
Well, we don't have to worry about it around here because, you know, our guy in charge couldn't reach my head if I was standing up.
Wow.
I'm just saying.
Boom. Yikes. All right. Anyway, Steph Curry still talking, but thankfully this time not about where did the moon landing happen. Steph Curry says he believes historically great teams in any era should be able to stand on their own merits, but he isn't going to let anybody think they can beat his Golden State Warriors. This is after Shaquille O'Neal said his Los Angeles Lakers teams that won three titles in a row could easily beat the Warriors. Steph Curry said he's dead wrong. Of course we beat them. We can go back and forth all day. Lakers won three straight titles, 2000 to 2002. No team's done that since, but the Warriors could this season. Jeff Sherman of the Westgate Las Vegas Superbook told ESPN that this year's Warriors team would be a 12.5-point favorite over Shaq's 2001 Lakers team, neutral court. 12.5-point favorite. Shaq told USA Today he doesn't think it would be a contest if the teams met. We would easily win, he said. Other people might feel different. Warriors might feel different, but we had one of the best teams of all time in 2001 when we went 15-1 in the playoffs. We could have gone 16-0, but Allen Iverson went off on us and stepped over Ty Lue. O'Neal's comments came up when Curry was asked what it's like for him and his teammates to be compared to the Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen-led Chicago Bulls teams that won back-to-back titles. On two separate occasions, of course, during the 90s. As someone who's been around the game his entire life, Steph acknowledged that he finds it hard to compare teams from different parts of history. He said, in terms of having three banners up there and creating parallels and comparisons to how they dominated the league in their run to what we're doing now, I think that speaks on its own, just in terms of us accomplishing the goal and fulfilling the potential that we have, and we're still in the middle of it. All those conversations are just entertaining because who knows? And two, the game is so different. Teams that dominated their respective eras need to be left alone in terms of what it means.
To that end, I think Shaq's right because who on that team on Golden State could deal with Shaq in his prime? I mean,
nobody ever dealt with Shaq.
That's my point. Right. Because, you know, dominant centers just don't exist anymore. A guy like that, a monster like that, they just couldn't handle him.
No, I mean, there's some truth to that, but then...
I know you got to deal with all the three-point
all shooting. The threes that are raining
in. I get that.
On the other side. So you're kind of getting a little bit better than a even break when that is matched up head to head. It's, yeah, I agree with Steph that it's hard to compare. Impossible to compare. But people do that. That's what we do. And, you know, you expect Steph to defend his team and Shaq to defend his team. That's what we do. Steph says he's dead wrong. Of course we would beat them. 844-477-3776 here in the huddle. Let's take the last break of this hour. We'll come back. It's the Thursday edition of the huddle on ESPN Upstate with Greg McKinney and Lonzo. Stay with us. It's a 50-degree afternoon. Maybe get up to about 54 today. And it looks like we have rain coming in tomorrow and rain coming in on Saturday. So maybe for the Shrine Bowl over in Spartanburg, Gibbs Stadium, Wofford College. Might be a little wet. We're going to talk to Bob Costello with the Greenville News about the Shrine Bowl coming up in the next segment right after the 2 o'clock break here in the huddle on ESPN Upstate. All right. Look, Stephen A. Smith is a pretty well-respected guy, right? We would agree with that. You like him? I like him.
Yeah, I definitely like him.
It's real easy to do this, what he did today. Did you hear about this? He's talking about the game tonight, Chiefs and the Chargers. He was on First Take today. And he said he's really looking forward to watching Chargers tight end Hunter Henry because of how effective he's been this season. And he's really excited about Hunter Henry's matchup against Chiefs linebacker Derek Johnson. You know what's wrong with that, right?
Derek Johnson isn't on the team anymore, right?
No, and Hunter Henry tore his ACL. Oh. They won't be playing tonight in this game. Yeah. And so he's taking a beating. Yeah, the Chiefs let Derek Johnson go in March. March. He's a free agent. He also said he was going to keep an eye on Spencer Ware. Now, that's not so bad because Spencer Ware could end up playing, but he's doubtful. He's doubtful. He's got hamstring and shoulder injuries. And so everybody's having fun trolling Stephen A. Smith today for that, right? And you can't blame him.
Yeah, here's the thing. As someone who messes up all the time, and you point that out, as you did earlier in the hour, you know, I think it's great to hear someone like Stephen A. Smith mess up.
Well, the L.A. Chargers official Twitter account tweeted this. Update. LaDainian Tomlinson, Dan Fouts and Lance Allworth are all out for tonight.
See, I saw that retweeted, and I'm like, what the heck is that about? Now I know.
That's kind of savage. But I like it. And I hopefully Stephen A. will take it with the humor with which it is intended.
I think he will. And here's the thing. It's not gonna slow him down. He's going to keep going.
No. It's funny, though. I like it. I think you gotta let him have it when that happens. And hey, look, you do a bunch of TV or radio, trust me, every day, you're going to say some dumb things. And you can't be expected to know everything. Now, he has access to a little more research information support than we have around here.
He does, but I can say it's so much better when it's somebody else that's doing it.
Yep. We'll probably do it before the show is over.
You got to sit over here or over there and try to decide, when do I point that out? Yep. Or do I just let them go?
Yeah, sometimes you're good at pointing mine out. And I get you back every now and then about the San Diego Chargers.
I'm not the only one. Everyone makes that mistake. I heard that mistake made. I was watching Goloka Wingo this morning.
And they did it.
Yeah, you just can't. You know, they were in San Diego for so long.
Yeah, kind of hard to get used to. I got that. And look, you're not expected to be keeping up with the injury status of every player on every team. All right. Still funny, though, when it happens. Well, baseball news. Got a three-team trade in Major League Baseball. The Seattle Mariners have acquired Edwin Encarnacion. I never can say this guy's name. Encarnacion. From Cleveland. They're sending Carlos Santana back to the Indians as part of a three-team trade that includes the Tampa Bay Rays. I don't see why Carlos Santana has time to play with all the touring that he's doing.
I got nothing, man. I'm sorry. I was wondering if you were going there or not. I guess you can't help.
I actually grew up with a guy named Carlos Santana, too.
Did you really?
He's kind of a bully.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask if he had to deal with a lot of jokes, but if he was a punk, I mean, you know.
Back when the musician wasn't that well known. Santana was around the band, but Carlos wasn't as famous as he is. The Indians get first baseman Jake Bowers from the Rays. Tampa Bay will get third baseman Yandy Diaz from Cleveland. The Indians are also sending a minor league pitcher, Cole Sulcer to the Rays, and they'll get the 77th pick in the 2019 Competitive Balance Draft. And the Mariners also get cash consideration. So, you know, we had the Major League Baseball winter meetings, and not a whole lot of news was made there. And some people, and we've had people calling on the show saying, what are the Braves going to do? Braves did nothing. And that was kind of what was expected, that the Braves would do nothing, and that's what they did. We did get, the Rule 5 draft going on. They have all these different ways to get players, and they have the Rule 5 draft. Baltimore Orioles got Richie Martin with the number one pick. That's going on today. 14 players were selected in the Major League phase of the draft. Only the San Francisco Giants picked more than one player. They made two selections. But Richie Martin is 23 years old, hit 300 with six home runs, 42 RBIs in 118 games for Midland AA team in the Oakland A's system last season. Houston Astros, Toronto Blue Jays, and LA Dodgers each had two players taken from their minor league systems. Here's the deal. Teams that select a player in the Rule 5 draft have to pay $100,000 to the player's former team. The selecting team must keep the player on their 25-man roster for the entire season, with the player being active for a minimum of 90 days. If the team does not keep the player on the Major League roster, they must place him on waivers. If he clears waivers, he must be offered back to his original team for $50,000. So all of that to say this, Richie Martin goes first to the Athletics in the Rule 5 draft, or actually he goes to the Baltimore Orioles from the Athletics in the Rule 5 draft. Kansas City got Sam McWilliams, a right-handed pitcher from Tampa Bay. The White Sox got Jordan Romano, right-handed pitcher from the Blue Jays. Miami Marlins picked up a right-handed pitcher. See a theme developing here. Riley Farrell from the Astros. Detroit picked up a right-handed pitcher, Reed Garrett, from the Texas Rangers. Nothing from the Braves in the Rule 5 draft, but a couple other picks. Joe Connor, a catcher, goes from the Dodgers to the Reds. Chris Ellis, right-handed pitcher, goes from the Cardinals to the Rangers. Travis Bergen, a left-hander, goes from the Blue Jays to the Giants. If you look down this list, you got like 14 players taken in the Rule 5 draft so far here today. And looks like about 10, maybe 11 of them are pitchers. 10 out of 14 look to be pitchers. And almost all of them right-handers, only one lefty in that group. So obviously pitching always at a premium in the major leagues, and that has shown up today in the Rule 5 draft. And another quick note, best wishes to Jerry DePoto, the Mariners general manager. He was taken to the hospital after he fell ill at the winter meetings in Las Vegas. The Mariners said team officials took him to a local hospital yesterday to be checked out. Wasn't feeling well. No other information was provided. Despite being sick, he was able to pull off that trade involving Encarnacion and Carlos Santana. Today, according to the Seattle Times, DePoto finalized the trade from his hospital bed with assistant general manager Justin Hollander standing nearby. So that's a good sign that he's probably okay, completing a trade from his hospital bed. Good luck and best wishes for a speedy recovery to the Mariners general manager, Jerry DePoto, falling ill at the winter meetings in Las Vegas. We'll talk a little baseball with Diddy coming up at about 3:20 as he joins us in studio. But when we come back in the huddle for hour number two, we're going to talk Shrine Bowl. We're talking about the best high school football players in South Carolina matched up against the best from North Carolina over at Wofford College at Gibbs Stadium Saturday afternoon. Practice continues, and we'll check in live with Bob Costello with the Greenville News and talk about some of the guys from this area who are taking part in the Shrine Bowl this year. Also, the same weekend this year. It's kind of unusual. You get the North-South game down at Myrtle Beach because of the change in the high school schedule. That's coming up. Stay with us. Greg McKinney and Lonzo in the huddle on ESPN Upstate for Thursday afternoon. We will be right back.